And I'm not even going to do an introduction today either because I don't think there's any need. You know what? For anyone listening as well, it's going to feel like we're just picking up where we left off because the last episode that we recorded was all three of us as well.
It was, yeah.
But what's mental is how long ago that feels like now.
Oh mate, that was like right in the thick of the war, wasn't it? Like what, like May, June time, something like
It
that.
was
Yeah,
May, yeah,
June.
it was May. It
Yeah.
Cable
was
wasted
May.
absolutely no time bringing it up.
Exactly.
The ban topic was straight to the front.
All I'll say, yeah, imagine getting like, I think the best tweet I've seen all week was imagine Drake getting 5 months' notice that he's gonna be called a pedo at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's gonna ring off here the whole stadium. An
Oh
A
mate,
minor, that
the
A
whole
minor
that
bar.
yeah.
Oh my God, mate.
Yeah. You know what? I wish actually when we had the conversation last time, obviously we covered what had happened at that point, but more happened. I don't even know. It had not like us dropped at the point that we were discussing it. I can't even remember.
No, I
No,
think
no, no,
it was Euphoria, and then it was maybe I think Meet the Grahams might have just dropped. So yeah, and then no, I don't think it was even that. I think it was literally Euphoria, and then maybe
and
Six
like
Nine
that,
Club.
of course.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
like
yeah,
that and Euphoria,
yeah.
yeah.
So yeah, they
Yeah.
were into it, but I think like Family Matters, I think, had come out.
No, I don't think it had, because Family Matters come just before Meet the Grahams,
Yeah,
like just
literally like
before.
20 minutes before or
Yeah,
something mad, isn't it?
and the night of Family Matters, I was actually DJing, so
Okay, right. So we hadn't.
we hadn't discussed it then. Now,
Yeah, so we got on it early, man, and I wish we'd waited for maybe like 2 more weeks to record that because so much more happened.
yeah.
And like, yeah, crazy, crazy. I don't even fully remember my stance on Euphoria. I remember when I first heard it, I didn't like it. But for the record, as I've sat with it over time, I highly rate it, you know. And I know both of you never expected to ever hear me say it, and Cable's never going to let me live it down, which is why I wanted to put it on record. But yeah, Euphoria was next level, bruv.
This
But
is amazing. This is amazing backtracking from
yeah.
you.
It's
Like,
inevitable. It was inevitable, though, to be fair. It was inevitable because when the quality of music and diss tracks are that high, I know obviously at first listen, you might not, appreciate it fully. But like you said, over time, things do grow or things get worse as well, equally. But with Kendrick, man, everything seems to be, the more you listen, the more you appreciate, and the more you get it. So it was
I will
inevitable.
also put it out there. I think Drake's Family Matters was very, very understated because of what happened with Meet the Grahams. Like
Yeah.
Family Matters also is outstanding,
Yeah, but it's just he was going
but
against one
just
of the
got
best ever.
overshadowed. But yeah,
But
Euphoria, man.
that was just a masterclass in like knowing when to drop disses. Like the fact that it, like Meet the Grahams completely like overshadowed it. It was just
Yeah.
like how he played that strategically was just
Yeah.
amazing throughout the
Every
entirety
move
of.
was perfect. Every
And
move.
even if you go into like there's all these kind of thread breakdowns and like the Not Like Us video and all the kind of references and things like that, like even like little things like the scene where he's like doing the push-ups, he only does 17 because of, you know what I mean, that like it's genius. You know what I mean,
I
he's
missed that reference. What did you say about 17 push-ups?
so there's a bit in the Not Like Us video where Kenny's like doing like push-ups, but if you count them, there's only 17 to kind of coincide with that A minor thing, because obviously 18 is like the legal age in America.
Right. Is that that's not a happy accident, is it? He did that on purpose.
Everything he does is on purpose, mate.
Did you count the push-ups? Cable counted them. I know you
No,
did.
I didn't. I took. Yeah, I was sitting there like one, two. No, that
To be
wasn't a real
fair,
one. Do it again. It's like a
I feel like I
PT.
probably would have just to see how many he can do.
Well, we've already seen how many we can do. Do you remember that video he done when he was in Compton, just doing press ups in the street? Remember when
Oh, he's
that
doing like
someone's back,
mad
someone's front
burpees and
garden?
shit.
Yeah, burpees. Yeah, Kendrick can do press ups, man.
I mean, he doesn't weigh a lot, so it must be well easy. But
Exactly.
yeah, no, I mean, I think it was inevitable that actually this was going to be the first topic. Even I've said to both of you all week, like, yeah, we're definitely not going to bring this up this time round. But yeah, it was sick. It was definitely a very good moment in hip hop, and yeah, good times, good times.
Do you think Not Like Us is the greatest diss track ever?
No way. I
You
think
don't?
the greatest diss track ever. Are we going to open up that can of worms now? Absolutely, absolutely not.
I just saw the question earlier, and I thought,
No,
is
no,
it
no,
not?
no. I think very, very impactful. And for this generation of rap, definitely the biggest. But I don't think anything will ever surpass Hit 'Em Up, personally. And I know people have been like, oh yeah, but Hit 'Em Up had other people on it and this and that. And really the most impactful part of Hit 'Em Up was just like the first verse and actually the intro. But if you look at how Hit 'Em Up has managed to, what's the word, like transcend its era. I can play Hit 'Em Up now and 18-year-olds go off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? This is a song that dropped well before most of them were born. All of them were born if they were 18. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I think it's the fact that it went as big as it did without the social media engines behind it. Like, this is a record that physical copies of this record had to make it about the world for it to be heard. Do you know what I mean? So I think, no, I don't think Not Like Us can ever, ever get past Hit 'Em Up. But it's like one of those things, like it's, Hit 'Em Up was, it's like a milestone. Do you know what I mean? It's like a hip hop landmark, I think. So yeah. I think, and because of that, because it's a different generation as well, it's almost incomparable at the same time. But no, I think Hit 'Em Up's probably number one. Mm-hmm. Not Like Us, definitely top five, probably top three because of the impact that it's had.
Yeah, I think time would only tell, obviously, it's only come out, what, June, July time? Not Like Us. So I think time will obviously add to that as well. But I just going on that, just the song itself, I do think it's a better song. You know, it's got some, like the A minor part, like even like the beat itself. The beat's so simple, but so effective. Mm-hmm. Like you're seeing kids in schools play it, like people having it like their wedding intros.
No way,
like,
really?
Yeah, I saw on TikTok the other day, a couple came out to it and it was sick. Like, I do think in time it will be a conversation to have. Obviously, I don't disagree. Obviously, Hit 'Em Up is like one of the greatest ever. Mm. But I think in time it will be an interesting conversation for sure.
I feel like,
especially because it was Drake as well. Like, he did it against the biggest artist in music.
When you look at it, I think all the best diss tracks have all been West Coast. So you look at Ice Cube, No Vaseline. Look at, obviously Not Like Us, West Coast. Pac, Hit 'Em Up. And even like the Lil B, remember like the Joe Budden diss that Lil B done back in the day? It's absolutely brutal. Again, another West Coast artist. Like all the best diss tracks have been by West Coast artists. I don't know what that is.
No, I think Ether and Takeover.
Oh yeah.
And that's East Coast. Them. And they're I'm always on the fence with Ether and Takeover.
I'll take over all day.
I saw you say that. I think you had a conversation with Semtex the other day online, didn't you? In the same comments or on a thread or something, but I saw you both say about Takeover. And I think for me, I would slightly lean on Ether, but just because it had more of an impact on the clubs where I was growing up.
I think it's more of the beat rather than the actual diss itself, though. I think the Ether beat is more iconic than the Takeover beat, but Jay did his thing more with his words. Like if you strip the beats back, I think it's a no contest in terms of lyrics.
A cappella clashes.
Yeah, just take away the beats. I think the Ether beat is so iconic that it adds more to the actual.
But I think with this record, though, I think beat selection is as important as lyric selection. Look at, for example, you know Taser, who does the thingies with Chucky.
Mm. Yeah,
Taser posted about Ja Rule clapback. Yeah. And he made such a very good point because at the time, Ja Rule clapback was hard.
That's a big tune.
It was so sick. And I think I almost broke my ankles rushing to the record store to get that, yeah? But if you listen to it now, it's so shit.
It was at the time, though.
Ja Rule's verses and everything he's saying is terrible. Like, not just bad, it's terrible. But the beat holds it up.
Mm.
That as soon as that beat comes in, especially the bass line, like everything about that, the beat is heavy. If he chose a different beat, no way. So I think beat selection on a diss record is as important as what you're saying. And in Ja Rule's case, more important because it held up the whole record. But I think Ether and Takeover, East Coast ones, definitely. I'm trying to think. I mean, we can cover all that another day. I don't want to cover best hip hop diss records because I know that I've not properly dug into it, so I know I'm missing out, and then we'll get cussed for it.
Yeah, what was the other list of banned words that we can talk about? Let me have
a look. Oh yeah, so I sent these guys in the group chat a list of banned words, and I've already said about eight of them. So that's out the window. You know what, actually, just while we talk about Diss Records, and I think let's sit down and do an episode purely on Diss Records, but Ja Rule New York. Jada, if you listen to Jadakiss's verse, I don't think anyone picked up on it, but he's definitely talking about 50 Cent on that record.
You reckon?
Yeah, 100%. I think Ja Rule New York has been overlooked as a diss record.
I'm going to have to go back. I have to go back and re-listen. I haven't got the
lyrics.
But
listen to what Jada says, and you'll notice one or two jabs at 50 Cent. That's what I picked up on anyway. So yeah, I think Ja Rule New York should be in the conversation when it comes to diss records.
I always kind of felt that like the whole Jada and 50 thing was really more like competition, not like a like beef, but it was kind of more like just two MCs just going at each other. Because obviously, 50 clapped back with Piggy Bank, and then I think what he had a checkmate, Jadakiss had checkmate afterwards, innit? And that kind of ended there, but it was really just the kind of like a couple of guys going back for the thing. Obviously, a lot of it was kind of aimed at Ja because of the whole, G Unit and Murder Inc. beef, but yeah, I'm trying to get the lyrics to New York at the moment, but I guess I can look at this another time because
Yeah,
we're
I
kind of
can't
getting
remember off the top of
derailed.
my head, but there are definitely, there's like one or two jabs. It's not, but it's easily missed. Easily missed. But yeah, I think you're right. I think it was just like two MCs just having like a little light spar. Whereas like 50 and Jar was just, I mean, no pun intended, was just murder.
It
And
was.
I think Fat Joe got off lightly because he was
Ironic.
kind of in the shadows of the 50 Cent Ja Rule thing. But I think if Ja Rule had been out the picture, Fat Joe would have got smoked as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Because, I mean, we all know Fat Joe's like, he's done his thing and he's got a certified catalog, but he's not a lyricist like that. But he's not, he can't go against 50. No way. No way. So one of the things I wanted to talk about today, yeah, DJ related now, was a conversation that came up in a group chat recently, which I thought was interesting. And I know Cable's going to be definitely have something to say about this, because I know your warm-up mixes, Cable, have probably been
Oh,
used by more DJs in the country than any other mix ever.
yeah.
But it was the conversation about having a mix for warming up in the club versus doing it live. Because the conversation that happened in the group chat was someone asked, has anyone got a warm-up mix that I can use? Because funny enough, they said, I've been using Cables for about 10 years now, and it's time to freshen it up. And then someone else in the group popped up and said, why don't you just actually do the set that you get paid for? Just do the fucking warm-up. And I thought, you know what? This is actually a really good point. Because yeah, where's your, I'll talk about my stance on it in a minute, but where are you two guys with that?
The reason I made the mixes to begin with was that if you're doing like a 5 6 hour set, it's a long ass set. Like you think about it, like, all right, cool, I'm getting the violin out, first world problems here. But we're the highest paid person in the room more time, which, all right, cool, that's the trade-off. But we're on our feet for 6 hours. You're lucky if you even get like a chance to like go to the toilet or get a drink or anything like that. You're confined to the booth for 6 hours, nowhere to go, no breaks. So for me, I was just like, rather than me like work my ass off for 6 hours, let me just kind of work smart, because no one's really kind of coming into the club for the first like hour and a bit. So let me just like throw basically just a mix on that's all kind of like light R&B from that era that kind of works, and people come in, they can kind of build a vibe and get a drink and whatnot, because people ain't really gonna start dancing until like start at 10 11 o'clock onwards, you know what I mean? And just kind of did it like that and just made a few just to kind of keep it fresh. But yeah, obviously there are some gigs where, like if I'm booked to play like a warm-up set, then I'll obviously go and warm up and DJ. But I think for the kind of like all-nighter gigs where you're there from like 9 till 3 or like for the whole night, just work smart, bro. Like, yeah, you can have fun with warm-up and maybe you can record some mixes and whatnot and have some fun with it and whatnot, maybe like play some tunes to the bar stuff. But yeah, I just looked at it from like a lazy person's perspective and I was just like, let me just go get a drink and I can just like chat to the bar staff and like whatnot. So yeah.
I think it does depend on where it is as well. I mean, for example, some clubs they might open at 10, but you don't really start getting people into like 11, 11:30 sometimes, you know? So I think it does vary. But there's some places where, I don't know, you've got a bit of a crowd already. And to put on a warm-up mix then, it could potentially damage the night depending on the sort of people in there, especially if it's like really open format. So I think it does vary. Like if no one's in the club till 11, 11:30, yeah, whatever, put whatever on, do you know what I mean? Put a mix on, doesn't matter. But I think it's horses for courses in that respect. I haven't done it. I would just rather just play the tunes, even though I'm just playing like song after song, like whatever. It's not a big deal. But yeah, I see the pros in it for those sorts of instances, but there are some cons as well. I wouldn't use it in every situation if you've got cables warm-up mixes, guys. Although they are pretty good. I wouldn't use them all the time just in case. And also there's an art in warm-up as well. There's actually an art in doing it. You know, I've seen some warm-up DJs completely, fumble the bag with it. Where there's some warm-up DJs where I think fucking hell, like you're sick. Like as a warm-up, that was amazing, you know? So
I think
yeah.
for me, like, I've done both. I've had times where I have put a mix on and let the mix run and known, okay, cool, it's a 90-minute mix. The first 90 minutes are covered. Sweet, cool. And there have been times when I've been like, so this is no bullshit. I've actually gone to sleep in the DJ booth once. I put a mix on and gone to sleep in the booth because I was that tired. But it was a club that I played regularly. And I knew no one was coming in. So I actually legit went to sleep in the booth. There's also, yeah, times where I think you're right. If no one's in the room and the place is opened at 10, and you know no one's coming till midnight, like, especially if you're in one of the specialist rooms that play R&B, hip hop, dance, or Afrobeats, like, no one's coming into that room before midnight. And most clubs, people will go in, like, if it's a multi-room club, they'll go into the main room first, stuff like that. I think that that's not such a problem, but yeah, I agree.
Absolutely
If
not.
there's customers in the room, I do think you should do your thing as a DJ and actually DJ to, even if it's just one person, two people, actually do the thing rather than just play the mix. The other thing to consider as well, and I've had bar staff say this to me, like, about DJs that run mixes, running the same mix 4 or 5 years straight every single week. And they're like, yeah, it's the same mix. We're sick of it. Like, can you just like change up the mix? Do you know what I mean? So I think there's that to consider. If you're gonna do mixes, have like four mixes you can put on rotation. Do you know what I mean? Week one, week two, week three, week four, different ones. But I think the main thing about it being called the warm up, I don't think it's just a warm up for the club and for the dance floor. I think like a lot of the time I count it as my warm up. Do you know what I mean? Because sometimes when I just start DJing just straight into it, I'm not as sharp or on point as I could be. It's weird. I don't know why, but sometimes it's just like, yeah, it takes me
To
like an
get into your
hour
groove.
to get into it. Yeah. You know, like if you do guest sets, for example, and you're only on for an hour, by the time you get 50 minutes in, it's like, right, I'm just really just getting into it now. Like, I don't want to come off in 10 minutes because I'm just getting there now. So I think the warm up for me is an important part of the night. And you can also control the pace of the night,
Absolutely.
which obviously you
Absolutely.
can still do that if you have a warm up mix on and if you're the only DJ. But I think, yeah, I do prefer playing every song myself rather than just a warm up mix. I think absolute cardinal sin if you're not the only DJ on the lineup. Like, if there's more than one DJ on the lineup and you're still playing a mix, then time to hang up the headphones, I think.
Yeah, the irony is that I think my warm-up mixes are now redundant because like now since all the 90s and 2000 stuff is hitting so much more in peak time, you could probably play my mix like peak time now and get away with
I
it
was
rather
about to say that,
than
you know. I was gonna say because the mixes are actually a little bit older and we're seeing a resurgence of the old school stuff, you're at risk of actually rinsing out quite a few big tunes in the early hours if you play someone else's warm-up mix. Because yeah, some of those songs slap in the middle of the main set now.
So like the life hack, if you got a mix, go to 7 minutes in where it starts with 50 Cent 21 Questions and just run it 40 minutes. That's your main set covered, mate. All good.
Job
Job
done.
done.
Done. There you
Yeah,
go,
job done.
ladies and gentlemen. It's
That's
a nice
cables
little
tips.
hat. So next week we're not going to talk about warm-up mixes. We're going to talk about main set mixes.
That's wild, isn't it? That's wild.
Yeah, I think one thing that other DJs could try as well is if you it, like, because some people will genuinely hate a warm up, and they won't like playing to an empty club for 2 hours. I quite enjoy it because it gets me digging through the crates. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'll look through and I'll find gems, and even like I'll just play stuff that I know would not work if there's people in the room.
Yeah.
But I like the song, so I'm playing it now when no one's here. But I think for DJs that don't enjoy doing that and do just want to slap on a mix, find a younger DJ that wants some club experience. Give them the first hour, give them 50 quid. Do you know what I mean? Just like put them on for the first hour. There you go. Come, like, I've said it before on the podcast about having like apprentices and stuff. Like, this is the perfect opportunity to bring new generation and younger DJs into the club game. The ones that are struggling, because I think with experienced DJs, I hear it so often where they're like, oh, fuck these new guys, man. They're doing whole nights and they're only charging £150, man. And they're undercutting everyone and they don't know how to structure the night. And the problem is they're doing all of that because no one's telling them different. Do you know what I mean?
It's how I started, to be fair.
It's how everyone started. Like, it's pretty much how everyone started. We just managed to blag a club job somehow, charged fucking peanuts, and got absolutely extorted by the club promoter.
No, I mean the case of being an apprentice is how I started.
Oh, okay, right. What, you, yeah. So you had like a mentor?
Yeah, essentially two or three mentors where I just went and done like a little warm-up with them, went there for the whole night, played like for the first hour. I did that for like a certain period of time.
Yeah.
And then over time, you kind of, you know, build relationships, get your own sets here and there. So that's how I learned and got brought in, per se, with two guys that essentially taught me how to DJ. So, and then, like you said, you get your own gigs where, you know, you might not be charging as much, but it's your entry level. And then from then, I got into residencies. And even then, a good friend of mine, Joe, he DJs around like Norwich and Lowestoft and that. I did the same with him as well. He used to come to Manchester with me. He used to stand behind the DJ booth for like 4 hours and just watch me DJ.
Yeah.
And like picked up visually. And then it got to a point where I was like, bro, why don't you just do the warm-up? And then he was doing the warm-ups. And then he was going back to back with me. And now he's doing his own nights. So it's just essentially like giving back, isn't it? And if you see someone you like them, you like their potential, then you put them on, innit? I just think a lot of people now want like instant main set. they don't want to learn to work. The amount of DJs that I've heard play that don't know how to warm up, like, it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
100%. There's a lot of guys, literally, like, especially the new younger guys that haven't taken the time to like learn the generational music and like what a warm up is, and they've got a 60-minute set in them, and that's it
exactly. And I mean, that's not necessarily their fault, because I don't think there's necessarily a place where it's like, I'll be your mentor. You know, it's almost like I want a DJ. They've gone to YouTube, they've got all the equipment, and then they're just playing tunes that they like. You know, so there's no real like guide or, I guess, OGs that are open necessarily to teaching people. So,
yeah.
Well, at least not signposted anyway. Like, don't get me wrong, if someone asks me a question, I'm more than happy to help, but I haven't got a sign on my website saying I am open to teaching young DJs. Like, it's just more like a relationship thing. Do you know what I mean? So if you haven't got those relationships, and you just do it off the cuff anyway. So,
and I feel like a lot of younger DJs, they're trying to sort of create or chase those boiler room moments where they go viral. Like, I think a lot of them, it's kind of like main character syndrome at the moment, where they're like, cool, that's what I want. They aspire to kind of have like a Jotty moment, or anyone else who's kind of, you know, like had like a really big successful moment on a platform like Boiler Room or Apartment Life or Vibroom or something like that, and they want to, that's what they want, as opposed to kind of like learning the ropes, say like in a club, for argument's sake. Everyone just kind of wants it's not like instant gratification, but it's like that's what being a DJ is to them, like having a crowd around them and reacting in that way and kind of, you know, getting the admiration and stuff, as opposed to kind of being like, I like music, I want to play it. And you know, it's a generational thing. You know, I'm sure that 100%. If we had that in the 90s 2000s, that's what we'd be aspiring to do, whereas we were like, oh cool, there's a DJ in the club and they're killing it, that's what I want to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah
But I think the difference with them now is like, for us, okay, I can only speak for myself really. I got into DJing because I loved music. I loved hip hop at the time. Well, I wasn't even a dancehall fan when I started playing music. I literally just played rap music. And then when I realized it would get me club stuff, I started branching out into R&B as well. Do you know what I mean? But like, for me, it was like, it was a love of music. didn't ever dream, like 15-year-old me never thought this would be happening now. Like I'd be, have a full career out of it.
Mm.
It was just a little bedroom hobby, but I put all of my spare time into it because I loved the music and I would just listen to music and play music to myself. And do you know what I mean? And it's like, I feel like a lot of the DJs that I know and that I grew up with, everybody was the same. Nobody started DJing because they wanted to be the guy. It was all just DJing and okay, well, we've completed bedroom DJing now. Now what do we do? Let's see if we can get a club somewhere. Cool. And then that was the graduation from bedroom was a bar or a club. And it was a case of now I can play the music that I love to people.
Yep.
And if you do it the right way, the music you love attracts the people that love the same music and you built a nice little fan base and community. And then suddenly you're a resident somewhere and all these people come every week to see you play. That's the beginning of my journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I feel like now Cable was bang on. It's like, okay, I want to be a DJ because I want my TikTok to slap and I want to go viral and I want to have the content. And they don't care about the I'm generalizing, but they don't seem to care about the music. And it's like, it's evident in the ones that only have an hour DJ set.
They're doing it because it seems cool.
Yeah,
because like it's the cool thing to do rather than, you know, the love of the actual art and or the music. Because when I started DJing, I was told to DJ.
Right.
Cable knows Paddy. He's a friend of ours. He's slightly older than me. But I used to work in a bar and I always used to like request songs. Paddy, can you play this? Can you play this? Cause I just love music.
Yeah.
And he was like, bro, why don't you just DJ? And I was like, nah, it's too hard. It's too hard. And then I went to his house like every Saturday for like 3 months. And he taught me how to DJ in that period. So I was lucky in that respect that I had someone that pushed me in that direction. I wasn't even thinking about it. I just wanted to play football.
Yeah,
so I thought I was a baller. And he was like, nah, just learn to DJ, bro. Like, I'll teach you. And then from then, I started to love the art of DJing, combine that with the love of music. Whereas I think people just got the love of, I want to look cool. I'm not saying it's everyone because it's definitely not everyone. There are some sick DJs that are doing bits like online. But also success looks differently now as well. Like for us, like for me, success was learning how to mix initially. Then it was like, oh, I want to be a resident DJ somewhere. That's success. Whereas now success could be, I want to be popping in TikTok or Instagram or YouTube. So I think success has changed as well. And also I think as older DJs, I would consider myself an old DJ, but technically with age I am.
I like the phrase more experienced.
Yeah, there we go. More experienced. Seasoned. Yeah, seasoned. Yes. And also, I guess I'm not like pre-generation like you two. I'm kind of like in the middle because I'm slightly younger than both of you. But the new generation now, they're not really thinking about clubs like that, I guess, for the majority. They're thinking about the online platforms. And that's something that we've got to get used to as slightly older heads.
Yeah,
things have changed.
Things have changed, bro. Here's a quick story that triggered me the other day. And it really got me thinking, like, is this the fact that I am pre-social media that I think this is fucked up? And should I just get with the times? Or is this really a messed up thing? So let me get your opinion on this, right? There was an event. It's doing very well on social media. It's doing very well online. And a few of their DJs came to one of my events that I threw in Brighton. And they're like, bro, you should definitely come. You should come and play at this. Da, 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 da. So they spoke to the main guy that books the DJs. And one of the DJs shouted at me and was like, right, cool. They want to book you. will you use USBs? And I was like, nah, I use a laptop. Like I use Serato, all of my tricks, acapellas, cue, everything's set up on my laptop. That's how I DJ. And they were like, oh, we can't book you then. Because having a laptop's going to mess up the video for TikTok. And I was like, what? And they were like, yeah, we film everything for TikTok. We do all the content for TikTok for our events. And if the laptop's there, it's going to mess up how the video looks. In my head, I'm just like, what about the people that are in the room? Like, what about the people that the event is actually for? Because me on USBs, it's not going to be half as good as me on laptops.
It's funny because it's the aesthetic. It's literally just the aesthetic. It's not a case of you're using that laptop. It's just how it looks. And
100%.
I don't agree with it. I think there's 0% validity in it. But I've done a few gigs recently where they say we don't want it's USB only because of the aesthetic, not because of anything else. It's just they don't want a laptop visually near anything. So it's quite common, I guess, now.
Do they not realize that you can just put the laptop to the side of the decks
Bro, listen,
out of shot?
or you
Yeah,
can even,
just put it out the shot.
and the venue I play as well, it's kind of got like a wooden cover as well. So you could
Right.
even have it literally to the side.
Yeah.
So no one would see it, but they literally is like a strict USB only in this venue in particular. So
The problem for me is, I think a lot of it is the fact that I have everything for my set up in Serato. That's the process, that's the program that I use. So it's like, if you want me to do what I do best, I've been using Serato over 10 years, bro. I can do this shit with my eyes closed. Do you know what I mean? And then there's actually also a part of my ego that's like, nah, you can't tell me how to DJ. Like, I've been doing this shit long enough to know, like, you can't tell me use USBs for fucking TikTok.
Yeah, I completely agree. I do think it's what you just mentioned earlier as well about Serato. You've got everything set up in Serato. Like, so for example, your cue points, like if you've got certain wordplay routines that you like to do that you want to
Everything, bro.
bring forward, everything's on there.
All that.
So I get that element of it. For me now as well, stems. I don't know about you guys, but I love stems so much, man. I think it's so
Can't
sick.
relate, mate.
But to fair, cable probably can. You probably can't. Yeah, we'll come on to that. But it's such a sick, like, cool tool to have. Like, when like you can just drop an acapella on a whim, you know, or you can take the beat out and put something over the top of it. Like, I think that element of it adds to the creativity and adds to the night. Whereas USB is obviously you're quite restricted in that sense. You're literally essentially mixing tunes.
Yeah, you
Whereas I
really have
think,
to be extra prepared for like your USB set. So like, you know, if you've done it and you've done it on USBs and say you use it for an hour, you'd have to like meticulously plan your crates and pretty much kind of, it's almost like the digital equivalent of like going to my record collection here and like filling up a bag full of records and being like, right, this is the finite amount of tunes that I've got and this is what I'm playing and I can't deviate from that. Obviously, you can deviate a little bit more on a USB, but it's all limited by obviously the search function. You know, if you ain't got 3000s and you got the old 2000s where you only got like 3 cue points and whatnot, then yeah, your kind of workflow is going to be a lot slower compared to right, boom, let me just quickly type something in on a laptop and Serato and you get everything there. Plus, like you said, stems and everything like that. So you'd have to, you know, if you had like wordplay tricks and that, you'd have to adapt it in a way where you can do it on USBs, but it's not as user friendly as doing Serato if you're used to it. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, things like Lexicon No Cable does help bridge that gap. Double, you might not
Definitely.
be there yet because you're a Packard Bell, but when you get a MacBook Pro, there's this app called Lexicon.
Unreasonable violence, bro. Come on, man.
Yeah, I was going to say I've never known anyone else to like run Serato on Windows 95. You know what I mean?
I think Volatile's on my in my corner here. He's still on like Windows something. He's not a Mac guy.
The
Yeah,
thing is,
he that yeah, but he's an agent of chaos doing that, seriously.
the thing is, though, I do kind of get it because I'm very reluctant to upgrade things. Like, I'm super reluctant. I mean, my Serato box, I mean, it took me ages to move over to HID mode, so I was very reluctant. So I do understand it, but when you take that jump, you're going to be a very happy man, mate.
I'm still
Very
not
happy
on
man.
HID mode, you know. I use the control signal from a USB.
My God.
If and that's
Do you still use Dices?
Dice. You know what?
Yes,
I'm not
he
going to answer
does.
this question because
Yes, he does.
I'm feeling very attacked right now. No, and the only reason I stopped using my Dices is because one of the joins in it started getting a bit loose actually, and they were being a bit intermittent. But I am I'm fully aware, that I'm using prehistoric equipment when I DJ. My technical rider still has a Nexus 2 on it, But however, I'm fully confident that I'll burn 90% of the DJs in the country in a club set. So anybody can come and chat to me with my dinosaur museum equipment,
But this goes
and
back to
let's get
what
it
you
cracking.
mentioned earlier. It doesn't matter what you're using, essentially. So for that event to be that picky about having your laptop or whatever, it's crazy because you should be booked because of your skill, not because of your equipment. Do you know what I
This is
mean? Like,
the thing,
that's what it
and
comes down to.
but also like the only thing about my setup is my laptop. I'm not saying like, okay, yeah, cool, but if I'm playing, there has to be Technics 1210s. I mean, the thing I do specify is like it's best if there's a Nexus 2 mixer. If there's an A9, then I'm out the window. I can't physically connect to an A9, which I've had that conversation on the podcast before. Nexus 2 or a Serato compatible mixer. Cool. I'm good with CDJs as well. I can use CDJs. So I'm not the guy saying, yeah, but take the CDJs out, make sure that there's turntables there,
yeah,
and doing all this. It's literally just the fact that there's a laptop. That's what I think was, I just think it was so messed up. And then I was kind of like, well, yeah, I'm not ever going to play for the event then, because if you're not going to book me with a laptop, which is how I like to play, I don't want to jeopardize what I do for their TikToks.
Exactly. And the fact you're going to be on their TikTok, don't forget, you're your own brand as well. I hate using that word, but you are technically your own brand. So obviously 100%. You're presenting yourself on their TikTok platform. So you want to give your best. Yeah. And if your best requires you to use a laptop rather than, you know, but like even said, restricting yourself for USBs.
Stripping it back from TikTok, because like respectfully, if they're recording stuff for TikTok, cool. But that's not why I'm performing in the club. I'm not performing and doing an immaculate set for TikTok.
It was a club set, not a TikTok set. Yeah,
it was a club set. It was
just got clips from.
Recorded for TikTok. So they have the cameras set up. They have everything set up properly. Like it's a well thought out content event, but it is a club event. People go to hear the music, and it's a club night, but that gets synced onto TikTok. But yeah, I don't give a fuck about TikTok content if I'm in a club. If I can get it as a bonus, then cool.
Yeah.
But that's not why I'm doing things. That's just the bonus. So I'm playing for the people in the club.
So that's why I've just started like recording my sets now. Literally started like Reading R&B slow jams. I was going to record the Def Jam one like last night, but the lighting wasn't great in the basement.
Get two of these.
Which one's that? Oh yeah. Of course. Yeah, definitely. But I think that's like the way it's going now. It's like, you know, I'd rather just kind of record my set and try and create my own kind of moments with like the equipment that I'm comfortable with. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to, having to sort of, because that's the thing as well. Like you're going to their thing. You're having to like, if you say you've done the gig and you like crumbled and were like, all right, cool, I'll use USBs, and then you're not able to give the performance that you want. Either you were to obviously able to pull it off, whatever it was. just saying.
Requires.
Yeah. that's their TikTok content, and that's not going on your channels. Do you know what I mean? This is like, you know, film for their thing, and they're getting engagement and whatnot. Do you know what I mean? So it's that might obviously trickle down through your socials and everything, but if you're gonna go out and perform to the best of your ability, then just start filming your stuff and just get ownership of your content, man.
100%, and that's something I have been doing more recently. Over the last few months, I've been experimenting with different types of cameras and different types of content formats and how to record the sound and stuff. And I feel like I've almost nailed it now, which is quite good. Because like I said, these two lights that I held up, the little 10-centimeter newer lights, the latest thing, they like just perfected everything.
Sick.
So, yeah.
That's sick.
I've got, what setup do you use to record your stuff with, Cable?
I just record my mix internally in Serato, and I literally just use my iPhone. I just put it on like 30 FPS, have it either wide angle in front of the decks or like just to the sides. I'm thinking about maybe investing in a GoPro this week or an Insta 360. I don't know yet. I'm just debating if the not the like the novelty of having a 360 camera is really worth it long term. I do like the idea of having like a nice wide angle clean shot with a GoPro. I'm still trying to figure out like what, and also things like low light settings and things like that. I know that the 360 is not great, which I know obviously you've got to buy like a million other add-ons and stuff for it, but I don't know. That's just kind of where I'm gonna sort of go.
Yeah. I think the benefits, so I use an Insta 360. I've got, I think, like quite one of the earlier ones. Mine's just an X2. And so one thing I'll find is I've got 2 hours worth of footage that I can fit on the SD card. Okay. But when it gets to less than about 30 minutes left, the SD card starts to struggle. And then the camera will stop recording, excuse me, and it'll tell me recording stopped because of SD card speed. And I think as the SD card gets more full, but way before it reaches its capacity, it slows down. Because it's like it's processing a huge amount of data, like 2 hours of 360 degree footage in 5K. Like, I don't even.
How big is your SD card?
I forget, but it might be 250 gig.
Right, yeah, because I think it also might sound like you need like one that's got like a really high write speed as well, if
So
it's like starting
this is
to
the
struggle.
fastest one on the market. I actually did
Right.
some research. I don't remember the it's over there on charge, so I can't get to it. But
Uh-huh.
yeah, it's the fastest one on the market, and it's the one that's recommended for the 360 camera as well. But it's absolutely fine. It's perfect until it starts reaching like its last quarter of memory, and then the thing struggles, I think. The other thing is the camera heats up. The camera gets really hot when it's left on for too long. They may have fixed that with the X3, and I think they're on an X4 now as well.
Yeah,
So
on the X4, I think.
they may have fixed that problem. But the benefit for me is you can do the wide angle GoPro look, or you can do the normal angle like portrait for your Insta stories, or you can edit it so that you're dropping something and then the camera just turns around and you can get crowd reactions. And you can do all of this stuff post recording from just having it sat in front of you, pushing record and then DJing. And then as you're looking through when you're editing, you can capture all of these different angles. That's the thing that I think is like proper
Very
sick with the
clever.
360 camera. Yeah, bro, it's so clever.
Very clever.
But it's and it takes away the need for like a videographer or anything like that to capture people's reactions. You don't have to get your phone up to do reactions while you're trying to mix. You literally just push go and then you're in the mix and then just capture it all afterwards.
That's dope. So technically, I could literally just like, if I wanted to kind of, I could literally bounce the wide angle view of myself and then a wide angle view of the crowd in front of me, and then if I wanted to edit that in Final Cut, I can take them two views and then
And
kind of
chop them together. Yeah.
sick.
So yeah, you can also, yeah, so you can literally make one video, but let's just say you record yourself for an hour on the 360 camera. You can bounce out a video of your hour-long set where it's focusing on you and what you do. You can then go back into the footage, turn the camera around, and bounce out an hour of crowd, like the foot just focused on the crowd.
Yeah, it's mad.
You can then go back into that footage, and if you've got any bits where you're beat juggling or scratching, you can zoom in on the decks and zoom in on your hands, and you can have it so that the footage follows your hand if you wanted to. So it looks
Oh,
like
sick.
someone's doing
Okay.
this and like moving around, and then you can bounce that out, and then you can go back, and if there's like one or two people that have reacted like mad, you can zoom in on them and focus
Yeah.
there, and then bounce that out. Right, everything that the camera sees, you can just go back in and rebounce out. You just take different angles and then in Final Cut, put it all together, edit it, chop it how you want, job done.
Yeah, that's gonna be a big ass file size as well. Like the
Yeah, it's fucking
I dread
huge.
to think how big the render files are gonna be on that. But yeah, it's
Well, I
mad.
think the thing is, though, I think the biggest file size comes from the camera to the app.
Okay.
Once you bounce it out the app, it's not too bad. Because obviously,
Oh,
once you
because
bounce
it
it
goes
out of
into
the app,
MOV,
it
right?
doesn't, yeah, it goes to MOV, or actually, I think mine's set on MP4. So it
Oh, okay.
doesn't, because I just use it for social media. I'm not using it for like high quality video, although it's still very high quality. But once you bounce it out the app, it's not bringing the full 360 with it. It's bringing what you've rendered,
What you've edited, yeah.
that view. Yeah. So,
So do you do all the editing on your phone or on a laptop?
majority of it on my phone. And then if I need to chop videos to get like different videos together, I just find it easier on the laptop, so I just do that.
That's
The other
cool.
thing I've found as well is the sound quality is not amazing on these cameras. So I tried with direct audio into the camera, which was okay, but sometimes it sounded like the top was missing. It sounded like underwater music. Do you know what I mean? Or if it clicked, the camera wasn't happy with any like clipped sounds or anything like that. So I was getting a very, very inconsistent quality of sound on my videos, which we all know like in turn affects social media. Like if you're playing a video, cool, it looks nice, but it sounds shit now. So like, I'm not interested. So what I actually got, one of the sound engineers put me onto this, which I can highly recommend. Let me just show it to you. It's called DJM Record.
Oh, the
Yeah.
DJ
The
Rekha, that's
Pioneer
cool.
app. You know about this? Yeah, the
Yeah,
Pioneer
it's
one.
dope. Yeah.
And this is sick, yeah. So I just plugged this into the USB port of the Nexus 2, and we're using a charger, pushed record, and it records direct audio perfectly.
Yeah,
Like
sick.
crystal clear. And then, or also if you use the mic, it picks up the mic because it takes all of the mixer's output into your audio, which is sick. And then what I can do is you can then balance it between the camera audio if you want to hear a bit of crowd reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So it's that this DJM record, sick. Like highly, highly recommend it. And that's part of my standard setup now if I'm recording sets.
Yeah, I'm thinking I might actually invest in like one of those portable field recorders, like for like I've used them before actually. Like some of these, I think Swish has got one as well, where he like hooks it up like to the back of the mixer, and you can get a mixture of like the ambient sound and then obviously the direct in as well. Because so like you said, it's good to get like good high quality like crowd reactions as well.
Yeah,
I have one of those also. It's called a Zoom recorder, the one I've got. I forget that's which the model. The model I've got's ancient one, of course. I love to deal with ancient technology. And it actually looks like a taser. It's got the two microphones like pointing in different directions at the top. But you can have the XLR input is on the bottom, so you can have two of them. But you can set it so that it records ambient mic and the input from the mixer as well, which is cool. But the one I've got, again, relies on battery power, and it's yet another thing to plug in and set up and make sure you've got. And now I've, for my setups now, I've got the camera, I've got the tiny little lights, I've got my phone plugged into the mixer. I don't then want to have the Zoom recorder plugged into this and that. Do you know what I mean? I spend more time setting up recording stuff than I would do actually setting up my DJ stuff.
It's crazy how much goes into it now, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's like, what tunes you got?
Yeah.
And I was like, what lighting you got, bro?
Yeah. Just, like,
it's mad.
Yeah, it is crazy, man. Mad. It's like a whole new world's just opened up because we've not just got to exist in the club. We have to exist.
You have to be a videographer.
Bruv.
Do you know what I mean? It's crazy.
You have to now. Like the it's almost like DJing is the least amount of skill that we need to be a DJ.
Yeah.
Because you need to be a social media marketer. You need to be a videographer. You need to be a sound engineer. You need to know what you're doing with lighting as well. And then once you've set all of that up to an expert level, just jump on and play some tunes, mate.
Madness. It's actual madness. But it's good though. I kind of enjoy it. I enjoy it. Like when I'm creating my reels and stuff, it makes it, you know, the creativity aspect of it is fun. You know,
I hear that.
Do you know
what it is? I think now for us, like I think the whole, like I think the Blendemic's over now. Like we're out of lockdown. Like there's no more Blendemic anymore. Like no one's putting Burna Boy over Cotton Eye Joe. It's all good. Like we're fine. I think honestly, like I was saying, like recording your sets and documenting good parties, I think holds a lot more weight now than being in your room and being like, you know, I put 3-6 Mafia over Asha K or something like that. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I think that side, of, like obviously it works for some people and that's great. And, you know, obviously people like Raymond and like Ethan who are like been, and even Flex as well, been like killing it with the R&B blends and stuff. That's their lane and it's working really, really well for them. And they've cultivated a massive audience. But I think for a lot of DJs, just document your live gigs, man. If you're at a festival or you're doing a cool booking and that, just record the entire thing and then just highlight 10, 15 key moments. Boom, you've got like 2 weeks worth of content there. Do you know what I mean?
100%. I think I slightly disagree with you about the Blendemic thing.
You reckon? I think it's done out here, man.
No, I think what's happened is a few DJs caught a buzz, started going viral, and inevitably the rest of like the people that want to be big on social media, a lot of other people jumped on the wave and suddenly you're seeing a lot of unoriginal content and it was just flooded. Everything's flooded. But what happened, and this happens every time there's a viral trend, is when after like 2 weeks of posting every day, they realize, hang on, I'm not getting millions of views. I'm only getting 62 views, but this is a lot of effort. I'm not going to do this anymore. And so you see all of the followers, not followers, I use a different word, all of the people that jumped on the trend now stopping because they're not getting any traction whatsoever.
Yeah.
But what this is something I observed recently, in looking at a lot of social media content, I think DJ edits and blends are the new exclusives. So do you remember before the internet music, before MP3s, when it was like, music in America got pressed to vinyl and then shipped to the UK, and the record store only had a certain amount on there. Or, for example, like YouTube videos weren't really a thing. So, like, certain DJs on the radio, they were going to be the first ones to play a record. And you had to be a big boy DJ to get the first play on a record. First plays were very, very important. They were the exclusives. Do you know what I mean? I feel that excitement about like blends and edits now, because I'm seeing a lot of people going viral for certain blends, certain edits. They're dropping an edit that no one else has. And it's like the sickest way to rework a tune. And that's what's blowing up certain DJs.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So that's where I see, like, actually, you know what? I think this edits thing, that's the new exclusives. Who's got the best edit?
Yeah.
I'm glad you agree.
Delayed reaction.
Yeah.
Definitely, man. It's, I think it definitely holds a lot more weight. And I guess, yeah, if you're able to kind of keep into yourself, it's like how, you know, house DJs have got, like, dubs or IDs as they call them now. The more IDs you have, the better. Obviously I feel like with blends and stuff, like, you run the risk of also holding on to them too long as well. Like, it's one of the ones where, oh, if you want to hear my blends, you got to book me. But at the same time, capitalize off it as well. You know, if you get a couple of blends that, like, do the business online or in the rave and that, slap them out on Bandcamp, man. You know, like, do what you do, whether you like do, you know, pay what you want, we have it at a fixed price, like, try and get some residuals in. Like, you know, dancehall blends has actually worked, like, pretty well for me in the last, like, year or so. Edits are definitely the one thing that kind of sets you apart from everyone else. But I think we're also in an edits era where we are hearing a lot of weird ass edits, and the whole set is made up of, like, people just playing other people's edits, which is cool.
Yeah.
It adds to the dynamic, and I think it works for things like festivals and boiler rooms and them kind of intimate parties. But regular high street clubbing, the majority of people just want to hear, like, you know, the
tune.
Exactly.
The originals. Yeah.
Oh, shit, I need to plug my laptop in.
Definitely. I think there's a few things in what you just said, actually. Like, first of all, I think the Bandcamp thing, 100%. I was very, very late, even though I endorsed it for quite a while. I was very, very late on the Bandcamp wave, just because I didn't really have anything to give away on Bandcamp. Do you know what I mean? I didn't really have any need to be there. And then through the summer, I think we'll all agree, like, hip hop rap music's been a little bit slow through the summer. Like, Kendrick's propped up the rap scene this summer. With not like us, has single-handedly kept everything afloat through the summer in terms of rap music in the clubs.
Yeah.
And so I made, I had a set in Newcastle, and specifically for this set, I put Tupac Hit 'Em Up on the Not Like Us beat. And then while I was doing that, I thought, you know what else would sound sick on this? Capleton. So I put Capleton on there as well. And then I made a couple of blends and then played them in the club, and the club went sick, like, absolutely sick. And I thought, you know what? I need to get this out there. So I opened a Bandcamp, put it on Bandcamp, and it flew. And I was like, okay, sick. This is actually like a thing. I know people have been on about Bandcamp for ages and I'm shouting like I just discovered fire, but like, for me, it's like, oh, okay, this is really like a new avenue, because I managed to pick up a lot of traction very quickly on there. So I'm like, okay, cool. Let me just do a couple more. I made some more edits for more sets, played them out. They worked. Bang. Put them on Bandcamp. And also, where I was recording the sets, for me, that's the video for Instagram to say, right, if you lot like this, this on my Bandcamp. Go get it. Do you know what I mean? And so, I did it on, like, you know, Wiley, Boasty.
Yep.
I did on that instrumental, chucked a bunch of acapellas on there, put a whole rhythm pack on Bandcamp. And Tyler's new one, Jump, well, not a new one now, but I did that on a Sharkey Active instrumental. And it slapped. So boom, straight onto Bandcamp, flying. So yeah, definitely endorse the Bandcamp thing. What was the other bit you said? Yeah, about some monstrosity blends, some horrible things. I think, like, it's the people that don't understand like music theory and when things are in key or out of key. I don't mind,
or in tune, or in beat as well. Like, I've heard some very offbeat blends.
100%. But, like, for me, I don't care about mixing in key live. Like, if I'm doing a live, I do a lot of live acapella stuff. doesn't bother me that much. I'm not that pedantic to do it in key. Like if I just have the idea and I want to do it, no one in the club cares, no one notices. But for like a blend product that's been, for something that's been bounced into an MP3 or a waveform now, like, yeah, it has to sound, it's got to be in key, it's got to sound proper. I think a lot of people don't understand that, so they're making real off-key blends that just sound horrific. And yeah, the third thing you said, which is definitely a point I wanted to discuss today, is about high street clubs. And you said like people in the high street clubs don't really care about like musically what's going on. And yeah, 100% agree with that. I think high street clubs are done now.
Yeah, it's been interesting because obviously you know, I work for a DJ agency during the day, and you know, we have some clubs that we supply DJs to, and obviously we have like a variety of venues ranging from like rooftop bars to smaller bars, and you know, those types of venues are the ones that are consistently busy and require DJs, and we have steady foot traffic, and it's always like a rotating crowd because, you know, with bars, people either stay or they go elsewhere and whatnot. Yeah, yeah. But I think in terms of like clubs, and obviously the ones that I've played at as well within like the last kind of 6 months or whatever, it's tough out there, man, because I think with young people as well, one, with older people, spending habits are different. You know, it's like you get to like 30 plus, you're not going to be out as regular like you was, say, like back in the day. You know, settle down, have kids, rare, and you kind of pick and choose the moments you want to go out, which is why brunches are great, because you can get a babysitter daytime, go out, be back at a sensible time. That's why brunches are flying. Also, I think with younger people, they just want to invest in experiences. So rather than pay like 10, 15, 20 pounds to get into a club and hear the same music they hear on Spotify and radio all day, which is, it's true because you're effectively just playing pop music, they want to invest in experiences. So they'd rather pay for a ticket, go to Warehouse Project, pay for the hotel and whatnot, make a whole experience and a night out of it. And you get to see an amazing lineup as well, and you know, not even that, but also genre-led events like drum sheds, for argument's sake. And I think the other factor into it, I think also drug taking is a bit more normalized with younger people in society as well, so people aren't going to go out and spend hundreds of pounds on bottles or shots and everything like that. You know, some kids they're happy with, you know, just, dare I say it, like going out, getting a bag, and that's their night sorted.
Are you saying the clubs need to supply the bag? Is that what you're saying?
Are you saying the clubs need to relax on the door? All these searches.
No. I'm not endorsing.
They need to relax, man. Let these kids in with their MDMA and cocaine.
I'm not endorsing drug use in high street clubs or any kind of venue at the moment. Drugs are bad.
So what you're saying is they need to refurbish the toilets and get rid of all the sloped surfaces and make them all flat surfaces now, so that these kids can go there.
Just say no.
Yeah, they said it, not me. But yeah, no, honestly, I think that's also part of the reason as well. I mean, and also I think, you know, even that out of the equation, I don't think people are really kind of drinking as much. I mean, not that I speak to like a lot of students these days, I'm very far removed from like playing student parties and everything, but they're not going out like they were. They're knuckling down and studying all the time because the fees are so high as well. Mm-hmm. So they ain't really going out like that anymore. And if they are, they're staying on campus. So like, you know, closest one to us, like Norwich or Essex, they're just going Sub-Zero or they're going to LCR on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night, and they're staying on campus. And even then, they might only go out like on a Wednesday night for sports night or whatever it is. So yeah, it's just... I think high street clubs are going through a very, very, very weird transition at the moment. I like to think that the generation who weren't stuck inside during lockdown, that was way too young to experience clubbing, will want to kind of go and venture out once they hit like 18, 19 or whatever. But we're a good couple of years off from them kind of hitting that age and deciding where they want to go.
I think the day parties and like those sort of restaurant vibes that people go into now as well, I'd rather do that if I was a customer. I wouldn't want to, don't wrong, I've been to a nightclub, you know, since lockdown and stuff. I've done that, but like in terms of my preference, I'd much rather a day party or like go to a restaurant where it's got like a nightclub element, but also get some food, you know, get a table, whatnot.
But I do think that's slightly an age thing as well, though, because I'm the same, bro. If I think about, if I want to go out, I'm not even that fussed. Like, I'm not even excited right now about the thought of getting drunk. I can't really be arsed with it. Like, hangovers slap me differently, bruv. So I'm not interested in being hungover for 14 days afterwards. But, like, if I think about an occasion where I'm like, okay, you know what? Let's just say if I was going to plan my birthday and be like, I want to go out for my birthday. I am way more inclined to do like a bougie restaurant or like a big kind of restaurant and drink there while we have food, or a brunch type event, like Cable said, where cool, we're done by 9 o'clock and I can go home, instead of let's go to the club. Like, what, be in a club till four? It's a weird thing to say as a DJ, yeah, but I can't think of anything worse in my life right now than going to a club and being there till four in the morning.
But yeah, I think that's just a DJ thing, though. I think most DJs would not want to go to the club on their night off.
I used to love it, though. Even on my nights off, I used to go to, because I enjoy hearing other people play as well. And I actually think that's a fundamental part of DJing, is listening to other DJs and not being the only DJ that you hear. I've gone through like periods of growth in my career where I've felt stagnant for a while. And then I thought, fuck it, I'm hitting the club circuit. Let me see what's going on. Gone out and been inspired by the people I've heard. And then from there, like, okay, now I know what to do to level up my DJ sets. And it's given me, it's like relit the fire by hearing other people. I think that's so important for DJs to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think go into parties that are outside of your genre and your circle as well. It's always good. Whether it's like a house rave, drum and bass rave or something, especially because a lot of us are open format DJs as well and kind of play across genres, it's always good to kind of go into like different seasons, different territories and kind of see how they're playing and what new music you can kind of discover from there. Because, you know, it's great, obviously, going and seeing people in our circle DJ, and it was great to kind of catch up with them. And obviously they'll always drop, like Craig will drop tunes that I might not have considered of, and you as well, Double. But yeah, it's good to kind of like step outside your scene a little bit, step outside your comfort zone and go somewhere else.
Yeah, that's not actually something I've done for years, is gone to like a different genre. But I think that is good advice, especially like, yeah, for open format DJs, for someone who just wants to be an Afrobeats DJ only, stay away from the drum and bass place, you're going to hate. But yeah, I don't know, mate.
I'm sure someone's going to put Chasing Status over Burner Boy soon and clean up on TikTok.
I need to send you both this year, where I've been playing around with edits, you know, Black Rob, whoa.
Yeah.
Yep.
I put it over Backbone.
Sick.
It slaps differently, bruv. Like,
send me the file.
I will. Literally, as soon as we're off of this, I'll email it to both of you. It's an absolute monster. Just for banter as well, and for a student night, I put Eminem Lose Yourself over the same instrumental. And actually, it worked. It went off. It's not one that I'm going to post on my social media because I think it's a little bit corny to do, but it works. I'll send you both those edits after we're done here. But the Black Rob one, the Black Rob one's sick.
Like, I want to hear that. I want to hear the Eminem one.
Yeah, I need both, to be fair.
You'll hear them. I'll send you both of them. But yeah, it's an interesting time. High street clubs. I played a couple that have been all right, still busy. But it is just like, it's almost like people don't really know what they're doing there. Do you know what I mean by that? It's like, it's not like these set events where you see like the content from certain events and you see from people's Snapchats or you see from the build up from events, people are excited for the event. And when they're there, the music's going off every song. Like, it's actual, like, DJs have been curated purposefully for this event, like, and the people there, this is the main point, the actual fans in the crowd are there for the music or for the event, whether it's a drum sheds thing, whether it's R&B slow jams, like, no matter what it is, they're there and it sounds sick. But you go to a high street club now and it's almost like, well, the night didn't end at 1 a.m. and this was the only place that's open, so fucking here we are. Do you know what I mean? It's that's how it feels to me now.
And I think, like, musically, that's also such a struggle for us because I think a lot of those venues have got no real kind of musical or brand identity as well. So you're kind of doing the best you can to the crowd that's in front of you as well. And it can vary from week to week. It could be, you know, one week it's a room for the Karens on a hen party and they want Taylor Swift. And then the next week it's, you know, guys that just want D&B. You know what I mean? It's a very... you know, there's some that have got like a bit of a kind of set identity, but I feel like a lot of the venues, like just where it's, you know, it's such a random mix of people week in, week out, it's very hard to kind of lock down kind of what they want.
It's almost, dare I say it, it's almost gearing towards being a similar type of audience than a wedding. Take out the grandparents and the old aunties in some cases. But you know what I mean? It's like, I don't do weddings because I know I'm not qualified to do that. I know I'm definitely not the best man for the job. Don't hire me for your big day. Like, I'm not going to do a good job of it. I'm going to end up stressed out and I don't know what to play. Right? That's where I feel like, from the way you just described the audience, it's like, yeah, that's the kind of thing you get at a wedding, where it's like, no one's there for the music. They're all there just for something other than the music. Everyone likes a different thing. You can't please everyone. And like, it's weird. I think high street residents probably have one of the hardest jobs in DJing right now.
100%.
I agree. Yeah, it's not. And plus the fact that a lot of these places aren't busy either. Like, it used to be where you go to a place, it's busy. Okay, cool. They might not have like a set identity music-wise, but you can take like the whole room on a journey. Whereas now, like a lot of venues are, you know, a quarter full, half full. So you've got to kind of focus on specific pockets and kind of try and just keep them there. And people don't want to be in a dead place. So if it's dead, even though the music's good, they'll just leave anyway. So it's quite a difficult balance at the moment, for sure. It's very, very difficult.
It's tough. I think the places that I've seen anyway, with a couple of exceptions, but the places that I've seen that are thriving are the smaller venues that have specialists. They have an identity. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So they might have a black music night on a Saturday, or it might be somewhere else that's just house music, or it might be like a dark little pit somewhere that's just drum and bass. But the people, like, they know where they want to go. And those particular people, there's small crowds of them, which is why it's smaller venues that are working this way. But that's what I see are being the most successful places at the moment. And also the people going in, they're willing to pay like £15-20 on the door without question to go in and listen to the stuff they want to listen to, even though it's a smaller capacity room. But it's busy because the people are there for that little bit of culture that they're in.
And also people follow people as well. So people are more inclined to spend money on a place they know is going to be busy rather than pay, you know, £5-10, whatever, X amount of pounds to go to a club that might not be as busy, might not be as popping. So
yeah, I agree. But I think in my case anyway, the places that I've been, everybody in there seems to have been into the music. It doesn't seem like people have just gone, because I think that's the problem with the high street places. People are just going because everyone else that's still awake at that time of night is just going there. Do you know what I mean? There's nowhere else for them to go, and that's just where people go. But with the specialist places and the places that have like certain themes or set type genres, everyone in there seems to know the music, and they're there for the music or for that crowd of the music. Doesn't ever seem like people are just standing around thinking like, what am I doing here? Do you know what I mean? So I don't know. It's a tricky one, man. But I think what I'm finding hard to pinpoint is like when it happened, because a lot of people are blaming COVID and lockdown. But like that ended 3 years ago, man. Like, I don't think you can blame that anymore.
And there was also a bit of a peak after then as well.
Yeah, yeah, massive. There was a huge COVID surge of people going out to these places, which that's the opportunity to show like, right, this is what clubbing is.
Mm.
But I think instead, the people that were running the high street clubs from the offices and the spreadsheets are looking and saying, well, hang on, look, entertainment's costing a little bit much this month. Let's cut it back. And it's like, well, okay, but if you cut back on the entertainment, you're cutting back on the thing that sets you apart from a pub.
Yeah,
it's a lot of variables. So, you know, okay, people's social habits did change in COVID. And if you've got like 18 months of not really doing anything, that you can really kind of program someone to kind of long-term socialize in a different way. Mm-hmm. And especially how we know with the younger generation, missed out on a year and a half ago in clubbing, that's so alien to them now. It's just festivals and experiences. I think with kind of that kind of kickback when we was all outside in like 2021, clubs like cut back on entertainment, they cut back on promoters for what they could kind of do it all themselves. As a result, a lot of London venues, especially ones in Shoreditch, kind of failed quite miserably. And then also other things like cost of living and what's been going on like with the economy and government and everything the last kind of like 18 months, like that also, had a massive effect. People like, should I go out clubbing or should I sit at home and pay for my central heating? You've got all these other variables. So yeah, I don't think there's any like one particular area to kind of blame. But yeah, I think people are still, I feel like it's not as bad as it was maybe like a couple of years back with obviously interest rates and everything like that. But people are still penny pinching at the moment as well.
Do you think clubbing can get back to where it was?
I honestly don't know. I think trends have changed so much, and the way we consume things is so different to how we did, say, even 5, 10 years ago. And even then, 10 years ago, infancy of streaming, people were still relying on radio to hear new music being broken. And okay, you had the blog era before that. That was kind of more, if you're a music head, you knew about that. Whereas now everything's on your phone. Kendrick drops a tune, there's no buzz on radio, and then it gets released. Kendrick drops a tune, it's on your DSPs like instantly. So you've got no real kind of incentive to go and hear new music if you're, a casual listener but want to hear some new stuff. Whereas, before, like you said, with like the clapback thing, you ran to the record store to get that on import to be the first person in your area to play that. And then people in the club are like, oh my God, you got the new Ja Rule. Like, imagine that. People are like, oh my God. Once upon a time, people gassed that you had the new Ja Rule.
Yeah, literally,
And
like it's not an alternative universe. People actually used to be gassed about Ja Rule dropping a tune.
honestly, I spent 10 quid on the New York promo, and I'll tell you, like, I felt like the guy when I had it. I was like, yeah, I've got Ja Rule in New York. And then, 50 Cent came and washed that out straight away after a few weeks. But yeah, man, what a time to be alive. That whole, like, Drop It Like It's Hot, New York, Jaquan, Tipsy, Chingy right there era, like, some of the tunes that didn't really age too well. But yeah, you had them on promo and stuff, and he was like slapping the clubs, man. It's nowadays, yeah, there's no incentive for people to kind of come and listen to music like that, unless it's a dedicated throwback night and they want to hear that, or it's something super specialist where it is very music led, house, like you can go to a house rave and you might not know 90% of the tunes that are there, but people are there because they want to hear. They're just there for vibes, and they're there because they want to hear new music. Do you know what I mean? It's the same with drum and bass. It's the same with any kind of electronic genre. Whereas Afrobeats nights and stuff, they've gone to hear a specific sound that's culturally like relevant, and the same with like dancehall nights and everything. But yeah, with kind of like generic hip hop R&B open format stuff, it's there's no incentive musically for people to come.
Now, hip hop, in terms of what's going on in the club right now, I think hip hop is in the worst place it's ever been in
Oh yeah, a hundred
my
percent.
DJ career. I think R&B is doing well, but not necessarily new R&B. It's the throwback stuff. And it's like we were saying at the start, like I could probably turn up at a club and do an entire main set of 90s and early 2000s R&B without touching a single new record and turn the place upside down with it. I reckon. I think that's possible right now. Yeah, hip hop, new hip hop, not so much. I don't think the high street clubs are going to recover. And I hope I'm wrong because that's a lot of jobs and that's a lot of like.
A lot of venues, bro. Think about it. There's a lot of new DJs coming out of the woodwork like every month, and the venues are reducing at a rapid rate. So
Yeah, but
it's.
again, I think that's going to just show how many like. How many DJs are just not on the DJ thing? When they try for a month and then don't get a job anywhere, I think eventually, like the popularity of being a DJ is going to be it's going to drop before too long. When people realize, like, right, actually, it's not that easy to get booked. And then I think there's at the moment, I do feel like it's a bit of a race to the bottom because, like. Clubs are just like, oh, okay. Well, oh, you're only £50 for the whole night. Oh, you've never DJed before. Oh, but you're only £50 for the night. Jump on. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the attitude. That's what I see at the moment in like the resident circuit. That kind of seems to be how it is at the moment. But I think it will bottom out. I mean, something will give, and it will be like, nah, look, we need the people that actually know what the fuck they're doing to come in. And I think that's where the specialist nights in the smaller venues are thriving at the moment, because they're booking specialist DJs. If you've got an Afrobeats night, you have a DJ that knows about Afrobeats and not just Burna Boy and Wizkid. They're going all over. Do you know what I mean? They're going into it, like into the genre differently. Same with R&B and hip hop. They're going into the back catalogs. They're cutting it up that way. Same with dancehall music. Same with all of the specialist things. I think the guys that are playing at the specialist ones are the guys that know their shit and are worth their money. But I think high street wise, it's just terrible.
And I think if we look at high street, categorizing it, it's really the kind of sort of like 400 or 500 cap places that we're talking about. Like I said, I think the bars and the rooftop parties and rooftop terraces and, you know, the hotel bars and like restaurant gigs, like they're still thriving, and they still want a certain caliber of DJ. You know, they're not just picking up like any £50 DJ off the high street. Like, they want to keep their clients there. They're busy. They want to make sure that everyone's happy. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, with things like, you know, certain venues in Essex that, certain clubs in Essex, you know, especially like in Ipswich and Colchester and whatnot, they're struggling to do those numbers. Do you know what I mean?
It's mad, because there was a point where, I'm just going to talk just from like Colchester's perspective, where on a Saturday night, everywhere was busy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'd have like the Walkabout, you'd have Hippodrome, Route back in the day, Silk Road, all these places were busy. But now you do well to find one place that's busy, let alone, you know, three or four.
I actually played in Colchester a few weeks ago. Is that where you're from, Colchester?
That's where I live, yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that. So I was in your area just a couple of weeks ago. And I did play. I played at Trilogy.
At Trilogy, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's the old Hippodrome attic, that venue. Right.
Like, perfect definition of a high street club. It was actually busy.
Yeah.
Was like, it on a Saturday night?
I think it was a Saturday, yeah.
Yeah.
Whether it was just busy because that's the only place that's left open and everyone just goes there, but it was busy. And the thing that I enjoyed about it is actually I played in, like, not in the main room, I played in like the front bit at the bottom of the stairs. It's like a weird like lobby area, but it's also the R&B room.
Yeah.
It's like the pre-room before you get into the main room.
Yeah, literally.
But it was cool because there was a pocket of people right in front of me that were on vibes. Mm-hmm. I like, it feels like they were the people in the area, like the cultured people that wanted the music and they knew it. And everyone else was maybe just there because that's where they're going to. But there was a group of people, a pocket of people that were just having the best time. And they knew the songs I was playing as well, which made it really enjoyable for me. And you know what it's like? Like, happy moods and smiles and that are infectious in clubs sometimes. If one group are turning up, it sort of spreads out along the rest of them. So they definitely held the night up. I think that would be an exception to the rule of high street clubs that I've played at this year.
Yeah, but that venue's still got three rooms, actually.
It has, yeah.
Got the upstairs.
So before, it used to three. Yeah,
it was three. It used to have like the cheese room, and then the main room, then the Envy, wasn't it? It was Envy.
Oh, no, no, you used to have like four. I think it was four at one point, or when they first built it, because you used to have like, when you went in, it was like the main big ass room, which is like liquid. Then you had obviously like the R&B room, and you had the Envy, which is like up in the corner, like that way.
Yeah.
You walk down and stuff. And then, I don't know if they still kept that room and they turned it into attic, because then they took away the back bit of the bar and made that the disco room or something, didn't they?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know if they kept it to like four rooms after that, but yeah, it's back to three, but they've definitely like, obviously confine the space somewhat more, because like if you open that all up, that venue used to be like 1800 people across those rooms like back in the day. Crazy. Whereas now I think the total cap is maybe about 600, I think.
Yes, it's for the best, man. It's for the best. The venue was too big. It was too big.
Well, it's the same with like Mercy and Norwich. Like Mercy is like 2000 people, or just over 2000 people. Like, main room is like huge. Now it's obviously been like sold and like made into flats now, but I think like super clubs, like unless you're like a ministry or a drum sheds or you know, like again something that's like synonymous with like dance music, they're a thing of the past now, in my opinion.
Agreed.
100% agree. I don't think they're bouncing back at all. And it's like you just said, I think like Prism in Watford, I think that's been sold to become apartments.
Mm-hmm.
Attic in Romford, that's another one that's going somewhere, I don't know, but it's gone. It's going to be turned into something else. Like, and the list is endless, bro. Like, there's so many of these places just shutting down and getting developed into something else. So I think the last few might do all right. It might just hold on. But I agree, like your ministries, drum sheds, the bigger venues for big, like popular dance events and stuff will hold on.
There's a question, actually. I don't know if you guys know. Did Recom own the buildings when they took over, or did they just own the lease?
I don't know.
There was a mixture, actually. Some were freehold and some were leasehold. So right. I know, like Watford, for example, was a leasehold one.
Okay.
Because they ran up a massive bill through lockdown when they weren't operating. I heard, can I say this on the podcast without getting taken to court?
You can
I heard maybe that the rent wasn't getting paid during COVID. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But... yeah, so I think there was probably a big backlog of payments, and if that was happening in one venue, I imagine it was happening in many venues.
Yeah, because I feel like if they kind of went into the deal and were like, all right, cool, X amount of like freeholds, we can always like, you know, liquidate some cash and, you know, basically sell off everything to developers at a premium, and then
from what I know, again, I might be wrong, but from what I know, they kept the freehold ones.
Right.
They were the ones with the smallest overheads.
Ah, got you. Okay.
Because they owned the buildings. And so right. I think they could probably hold on to them and be like, right, if we need to, we get rid of the building and free up the cash, but there's no rent to pay. So our business rates are serious, bruv. I think the one in Watford was apparently like 250 grand a year or something like that.
Oh, the one in, I remember chatting to someone in Ipswich, and they were like saying that they went to renew the deal and like they turn around and, oh no, I think it might have been the rent. It might have been the rates, one or two, but it just literally just like increased by fivefold overnight. And it was just like, yeah, like,
unaffordable. Just
not sustainable at all. Yeah.
But you know what? I think in those instances, that's probably the building owner has probably been offered millions by developers to say, right, okay, yeah, let's turn this into apartments, and they're like, well, yeah, but I've got a contract that I have to provide the venue. Okay, cool, just put the price up beyond what it could possibly be, and now you're forcing the club to walk away, and now you're not in breach of contract. I imagine that's probably what's happened there.
The one in Ipswich is now like a big inflatable thing. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah, yes, yeah. So I've been there.
Inflatation is sick.
Yeah, it's sick, man. Yeah. It's what I heard, like on the first day, like there was a problem with the generator and it all just collapsed on everyone.
Just folded. Just...
yeah, like people getting like trapped in the ball pit.
Teething problems.
Yeah.
But now, like... yeah, I took the kids there earlier this year, and it was quite sick. I was thinking, fuck, you know, I used to play in here. Like, this used to be a club.
Oh, no.
Yeah, now it's just inflatable balls everywhere.
It's like jumping on the bouncy castle. I used to DJ in this particular spot, and then jump into the ball pit.
Weird. Yeah, imagine that. All the clubs now just turning into soft play.
Oh, mate. Soft play is a hell on earth.
Oh, oh mate.
DJ at a soft play. The local one here, they do like a party night on a Friday, I think, for the teenagers. Oh, no, sorry. It's a trampoline park, not a soft play.
Okay.
But they do like a party type, like under 18s clubby type thing. Imagine having to DJ for that. That'd be a nightmare. TikTok
everywhere.
10-second songs all night. The last thing I wanted to say, yeah, was when it comes to setups and using equipment in the club sets, do you guys use what's there or do you take your own stuff?
Depends. It really depends. I mean, with like majority of venues, I'm quite lucky that it's all like CJ2000s and either a DJM or a either 900 or A9. Bizarrely, they've got that old Queen's Head now, which is quite annoying. But yeah, like there's only like a handful of gigs. Like if I'm playing the Arc in Newmarket, like I'll take my S11 because it's just easy for like me and Vanel to kind of switch over and that. I mean, like do back to back. But yeah, more time, I'm just using the equipment that's there. Unless it's a corporate where I've got to take a controller. Everything's just supplied by the venue.
Yeah, same. Like 9 times out of 10, I'm using the equipment that's already provided.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to take your own stuff, do you charge a hire out fee?
Privates, yes.
Yeah, privates, yes. And then for something like Newmarket, I'm on a stage, no one can get to us, and then we got like a big flat ass table. I've kind of factored it into the fee. Like we kind of bumped the fees up in the last year, and I said like I'll factor it in and obviously bring the S11 as part of that. But for like gigs like that where that's really lucky, I really enjoy doing. I don't really kind of like, charge extra per se, but yeah, I factor into the fee pretty much. But corporates and that, run me my money, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm the same. If it's a case of somewhere's booked me, but they don't have equipment, then I'll factor, okay, well, I'm bringing my equipment, that puts the price up. Like, and that's the higher fee there. If it's like in some instances, when I play, actually not anymore because they have turntables, but when I used to play in Brighton on a Tuesday, I used to bring my turntables to the club.
Because you took them to Romford as well?
Romford as well in that instance. But that they've got equipment there, but it's just my preference to use turntables. So I don't ever put that on. I mean, that was a Recon thing anyway. They're not paying for equipment hire. But because it was my choice to bring the equipment, I didn't slap it on there. But if it's ever a case of, okay, you don't have equipment and I have to bring my stuff now, I'm charging the extra. Yeah. But what I make sure I do is if I'm the only DJ on the night, then I'll do everything I can to have turntables there. Because I love turntables, bro. Like, I know it's like old shit now, vintage technology. But I love using turntables. If there's another DJ, I'm cool with CDJs or whatever's there. Like, I don't want to be that difficult guy. Like, we're already unplugging laptops. I don't have to move decks around and turntables around and stuff. It's just a headache. But something happened the other day at a club I was playing at. There was a few of us on the lineup. And it was like 12:30, 1 a.m. So it wasn't peak time, but it was busy. And a DJ turned up. She was quite new. And I think basically one of her friends had said, yeah, come on and jump on during my set. You can have half of my set to just like get in the club, get your content, whatever. She came with one of those tiny, you know, like the tiny little Numark mixers.
Oh, like the £50 ones.
Yeah, but not like the really small, small ones. The medium, like just a bit wider than a laptop type ones.
Oh, like a...
Like the Reloop one.
Yeah, like the Reloop Ready.
Just like that, yeah, basically. And then she basically plonked it on top of the controller that was already there and started plugging all her shit in, and then her computer wouldn't connect to her controller. And then like, so the DJ that's on is trying to now DJ, but she's trying to set up her controller on top of the controller he's using to try and DJ. I was just sat there like, I didn't want to get involved. It's not my place. But I'm just thinking, this is a bit mad. Like, I don't know. I just thought it was weird that you're bringing your own controller and it's not even working now. You're just jarring up the night for everybody because your shit's not even plugging in, and it was just all a bit weird and awkward.
I know, they just sat there playing Jenga with controllers.
Literally. Yeah. And the logical thing.
Like, it annoyed me a little bit because I'm just like, you should... I don't like using controllers, but for that night, because I knew all the other people on the lineup were using controllers, I plugged into that controller to use it. Mm. Cool. Like, I'll do that because for the good of the night and the ease of everyone else, so we're not moving shit around everywhere. Like, I'll just plug into the controller and I'll just do it that way. Why can everyone not just be like that?
Logic, bro. A lot of people don't have logic.
Common sense. Mm-hmm. It's not
that,
common.
What that girl probably should have done is probably... before she, because she knew ahead of time she was going to be playing, just message someone about, yo, is there space for my controller to go next to the other one, for example. But again, new DJ, she might not even be thinking about things like that. So when she turns up, she's like, oh shit, where am I going to put this now?
It's weird, isn't it?
It's one of the things where I feel like you have to be put in that spot and you have to fail to kind of go back and be like, all right, cool, next time I need to do this. Like, you know, there's no... You know, it's not like a real kind of training manual for stuff like this. It's like it's one of them vocations where you have to kind of fail on the job to get better. Obviously not at the expense of the venue or the promoter or anything like that, but sometimes you have to like kind of go through these like logistical setup problems to kind of, you know, work out how to like troubleshoot on the fly and stuff. Like, it's kind of weird. Like, you can tell someone how to navigate something if like wires ain't working, but sometimes you gotta go and get thrown in the deep end and figure out yourself.
Sometimes you gotta hold it L, man.
Yeah, we definitely all had technical nightmares, 100%.
Yeah. Easily. Yeah.
And really, when it comes to equipment, I'm probably the last person that should be speaking about taking stuff to clubs with my old-ass laptop that doesn't connect to A9 mixers. But it's just a weird one. I just thought like, I don't know. It's weird. I feel like the DJs, some venues just don't have anything, so people do have to take their own stuff.
Yep.
But then I just think, if you're with multiple DJs, don't bring your own shit. It's just awkward.
I agree. But like Cable said, you've got to learn that first, and there's no...
You have to go through the manual. Sometimes.
Yeah, there's no manual, man.
1 a.m. maybe. But gentlemen, I think that's all the topics. Have you guys got anything you want to bring up?
Kendrick, not like us.
Go on, say some more of the band words. What else was there?
I think that was
I think
it.
Canada was on there, right? Canada was on there.
Canada.
Glazing was on there.
Glazing was on there. Yeah, I'll put Canada in there as well.
Yeah.
Hang on a minute. I'm going through this list right now. Bad words. There was Summer Banger. And K-Dot. Oh, and Champagne Pappy. That's it.
And Super Bowl. I think you said Super Bowl earlier.
Oh, yeah. I mentioned that straight away. Yeah, yeah. This is cool. Cool.
I think it was interesting we haven't discussed the 1,000 bottles of baby oil debacle that's been going on, but
we need to let that, I think, play out in court first before we come back with a report on that. Oh yeah, the other thing as well, double, I forgot to say, you put this in the group chat, is I think my proudest moment this year so far is here watching you backtrack about Kendrick on the podcast, and also admitting in the Not Life group chat that RTD2 is a better rapper than J. Cole.
Well, first of all, the RTDT thing was obviously banter. No one's a better rapper than J. Cole. But yeah, I did say that I quite enjoyed Euphoria. And you know what? The funny thing about that was, it was actually my son, who's 12, who was 11 at the time, who put me onto Euphoria. Because I was doing the school run every day. And he was like, Dad, can we put Euphoria on? I was like, really? Like, and then after like 2 weeks of that, solidly every day, You know what it was? It's listening to it more and picking up on other lines where it's like, oh shit, like he really said that. Like that's sick. It's definitely I definitely rushed to skip over Euphoria too quickly. Because I'll be real, I still, even though I think it was a good record, I still don't like Kendrick's voice. It jars me. So like he's obviously the lyrical talent, but I don't like his voice or his cadence and his delivery sometimes, which is why I was like just against it.
This time next year, you're going to be a full-blown Kendrick fan.
100%. Well, I can see it already. No. Come February, when he does that Super Bowl performance, double's going to be K-Dot.
I don't know if I'll watch the Super Bowl performance, to be honest. I still haven't seen Dr. Dre's one.
You will watch it. Guaranteed you'll watch it. You won't be able to avoid it.
Fucking well.
It's like his performance, that pop out show he done. Like I couldn't, even if I didn't want to, which obviously I wanted to, but like it was everywhere.
I didn't see it. I saw tiny little clips, but I've not seen his pop-up show.
Just watch his part. Yeah,
and actually I got into it with someone on an Instagram comments. They were really offended with me saying this. I don't think Kendrick's a good performer.
Huh?
And that, I don't what? Think Kendrick's a good point. I've got no, I can back this up. I don't think Kendrick's no, I can. I don't think Kendrick's a good performer, right? Because I've seen him, and this is where I got into it with someone, because I just said that. I just said Kendrick's not a good performer. And this guy was like, how the fuck can you say that? He doesn't take a breath, he doesn't need water, he does that. And I'm just like, no, I've seen him 4 times last year perform. I saw his show 4 times last year. And not one time did I think that was really good. There was no energy to it. He was slow, even down to the musical. Look at Craig's face. Even down to the musical programming. Yeah. I don't know who planned the set list, but the journey was off. Like it was not a good performance. And I saw the same performance 4 times. And before anyone's like, well, if you thought it was shit, why did you go 4 times? It was on the Rolling Loud tour in Europe. So we were on the same dates as him. We just weren't performing at the same time. So Cable was sat there thinking, yeah, why would you see him 4 times?
I was just like, why do you spend money? Yeah, 4 times to go see him.
No, we were at the same festival. We were performing on the Rolling Loud tour. He was on the same tour. So we saw his performance. But I just did not think it was good.
I feel like you're going to backtrack after Super Bowl. You'd be like, actually, do you know what? That's a really good performance.
I think it's wild. I went to his tour last year, the Mr. Morale tour, and I got the complete opposite take from double. The complete opposite.
Interesting. So do you think maybe...
I think I would put him in now active rappers. There's not a better performer than him in hip hop. There's not a one. Like, not even close.
Interesting.
Maybe Travis Scott, but Travis Scott is all the palaver, all the like the, you
see,
know,
the
jumping
Travis,
in the crowd
the
and stuff.
Scott thing.
I haven't seen Travis Scott in my life, but I've seen it.
And again, like, shut up about RTD2 Cable. I think J. Cole is a really good performer.
He is. He's not as good as Kendrick.
But I'm aware I have J. Cole bias. So when he's playing certain songs, no Diddy, but they touch me differently, innit? Like
Yo.
like I enjoy Cole's catalog, so when he performs certain songs, I have that feeling.
The thing is, I am a J. Cole's my favorite rapper.
No, he's not. Kendrick's your
He no,
favorite.
he
You just
is. He
disguise
is.
it. You
No,
just disguise it.
bro,
Look, we
listen.
discovered this
Listen
last
to me.
time. You
He's my
say he
favorite
is,
rapper,
but he's
but
not.
there's just levels, bro. Like, yeah, I don't think he's even close to anyone touching in terms of hip hop performance. Not even close. He's that good.
See,
Maybe,
I've
I
seen
don't know.
both, and I've seen them both within a year of each other, and
Was it at a festival or was it his show?
so that's the difference. That's the other thing I was going to say. They were both at festivals. So do you think it could be that I saw him at a festival where it's not fans? It's
There,
just people
there's
that
that,
he's the
and
headliner, so
also,
it's a big mixture. Because yeah,
and
like
also,
I wasn't the only person in the crowd that thought this, bro. The crowds in each show, apart from like the core people right at the front by the stage, generally no one was really like getting into it. It
but
was packed.
you know yourself from festival shows that you're lucky. I mean, okay, they might have some kind of sound check because they're headliners, but you know yourself from experience that the best you might even get sometimes just like a line check, and then that's it. And you don't get that much extra production if it's your own tour. You're there from like early. You've got the extra production. You've got sound check. You've got all these other variables as well. Whereas like festivals are pretty much, it's a very stripped back production and performance compared to, if you're doing like an arena tour or something. Do you know what I mean?
I would
Yeah.
agree that there's definitely way more production on the tour, but Kendrick had a lot of production on this. Well,
Right.
it was rolling loud. The stage was very produced.
Was it the same performance he'd done at Glastonbury?
I didn't see that one, so I don't know.
Oh, okay, because his Glastonbury one again. If it was the same as that, I couldn't. Again, it
But
was incredible.
I
Like.
can't imagine it would deviate that much, apart from this year's music. Because it was last year that I saw him. I think it was last year. Was it last year? Yeah, it
When
was
did he do
last year. It was
was
last year.
Glastonbury last year that he did?
Yeah.
When we had the crown with the blood.
Yeah, because that was like it was like what, a year after Miss Morale. I think it was.
So it must have been last year. Yeah, so if it was that, then double you're wrong
Highly
again.
likely it's the same one, but bro, four times I saw him and four times I was not impressed.
Fair enough, man.
I'll
Fair
be
enough.
honest.
You like what you like, I guess, my friend. You
Yeah.
like what you
Shut up,
like.
KB.
And tastes do change, bro. Tastes do change.
Exactly.
Tastes do change. So you have
Right,
time
so
yet.
we're locking back in again after the Super Bowl, are we? Where I can sit and say, yep, wasn't impressed.
Whenever you say the word, mate, whenever you say the word, I'll be there.
Interesting. Well, gents, anyway, we've done full circle, so I think that's an appropriate time to finish before Cable tries to bury me even more. This whole ending part's getting edited out anyway. I'm not really stressed.
Ah, fair enough. It's all good. Is this still the number one podcast in Finland as well?
I haven't checked actually, Mo. I was unsure about whether I haven't actually checked anything to do with the podcast all summer. And I'll be honest, I was unsure about whether to start with an apology for the silence, but I'll be honest, I'm not sorry.
Nah, man, you've got life, bro. Life's life, isn't it?
Everyone was there. What I am grateful for is actually I've had a stack of, I haven't even opened the talk over Insta until like 2 weeks ago. And it was just a pile of DMs. Like, where are you? Like, are you guys okay? Are you recording again? Like, what's happening? Where's the podcast? Someone even said they've gone back and listened to the entire back catalogue again,
That's sick.
that's not just hours of listening. That's like a few days worth of
Yeah.
back-to-back listening. That's loads. And they said, yeah, they've done another lap, and by the time they got up to date again, there's still not another episode. So I was
Oh,
like, right,
mate.
okay, yeah, cool. Things
Maybe
have
it's time.
settled. Things have settled in life now. So okay, it's time to get back onto it. So yeah,
I feel like we definitely need to talk about CB's Serato
POVs.
AI
Oh, his
thing.
AI.
All right, you know what? I'm gonna message him and try and lock him in for another one. And if either of you two want to jump on for that episode as well to talk about Serato
I'm
AI,
about, man.
yeah, man.
I'm about.
we can do that. I'll personally, I think he's trolling. 100%.
You reckon?
I think he's
Well, you
trolling.
don't think he's made it?
I don't think so.
I
I don't
think
think
he
so.
has.
He has some incredible apps.
He
Like, and
he's
he's
got some
been
Tony Stark shit in the garage, man. I'm
he's
just
been
saying.
he's been doing some amazing things, but I don't think he's made Serato AI yet. I think he's trolling, and I think I was amazed at how many people because I don't think it was real, I'm amazed at how many people I think fell for it. Because it was just,
I'm intrigued.
It's just amazing video editing. I'm certain.
If that's the case, respect, you got me.
if he has created Serato AI, that's it, retirement plan. He's done. Like, he will make so much money selling that to Serato that he's buying an island somewhere and disappearing.
True.
But I'm not convinced.
Would you use it?
For monotonous tasks, yes.
Like?
Setting cue points. Serato, set all of my cue points on the first beat, on the fifth beat, on the ninth beat of all intros. Serato, set in 8-beat loops at the end of every instrumental intro, outro. All of that sort of stuff. Yeah, perfect. Okay. I wouldn't use it to curate playlists or anything like that. Because I'm very much like, I'm still one of the DJs that believes that if you come and see me DJ, you get the DJ double experience. You listen to what I like. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'll play you the songs that I like, not I'll play you the songs that I think are popular in the order that will work to make the club the best. Like, I'll play what I want to play in the order that I think will make the club the best. So I don't think AI can't do that because it's not in my head.
Yeah,
over time, studying my sets, it probably could over time, but no, I'd use it for like laborious tasks.
Yeah. I was more so thinking about like the actual mixing of two songs, that element.
No, because I still don't use sync, bro. Like, and I know some DJs do, and I've never been off the, if you use sync, you're not a real DJ, but I still enjoy the challenge of making that fit that.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I don't, although I think it's, if he has made it, and he's not trolling, I think it's amazing that he's made that and like super creative, but I think it would be, I couldn't imagine people using it, man. I really couldn't imagine. Maybe I've got too much faith in humanity.
Yeah, 100%. Because just,
but I couldn't imagine people using that element of it.
Some little influencer girl, she's popping on TikTok and now she's getting DJ bookings. She has no fucking idea what she's doing. Now she's bought the little Numark controller to the club. Now Serato AI is doing the set for her. That's it.
I'll tell you what I would get Serato AI for. Just to make me a new Walmart mix.
Oh.
Do what, sorry?
Warm-up mix.
Yeah.
Oh, the new warm-up mix, yeah. Yeah, the perfect. Serato AI warm-up mix.
Perfect.
Yeah. But no, I don't think it's real. No way.
Only he can tell us. We'll get him on.
Yeah, I'll chat him to back him. I'll see if it's available next week, and then I'll let you guys know. And let's go from there.
Perfect.
Good. Nice perfect, one, bro. Mate.
Perfect. Legend. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Just Craig, DJ Cable, thank you very much for joining me again.
Thank you, sir.
And shouts to everyone for listening. Do you want to plug your socials, boys? I know it's a bit 2023, but plug your socials if you want. Your band camps, whatever.
Hit me on MySpace.
I can't deal with you, Cable. Fuck off.
At DJ Cable, djcable.bandcamp.com, Dancehall Blends Volume 5 coming at some point soon, and might be the last one in the series for a while, but stay tuned, and that's about it, man.
Perfect, mate. At DJ Just Craig on everything, and djjustcraig.bandcamp.com as well. I've got a few little edits on there too.
Bang, bang.
Bang, bang.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Diamond.
See you in a bit.